into the Sleight of Hand podcast, episode 64. We flash back to the candlelit room with Granger sitting in her chair as the quill starts to write. Tears fall from her face onto the paper. She flips the pages back vigorously until she falls back on an earlier time of Cal.
What do we have here?
As an ancient wanderer ponders, as a line of text burns itself into his scroll of time.
Ah, yes. It seems as though the fire has been freed. After reuniting and making peace with body and spirit, I wonder what led to the unbinding of fire. Shall we have a look? Let's see here. Oh, looks like things started to fall into place about a century ago.
Back in Undershold, about 105 years prior to the start of the campaign, Braxton Firestone, Cal's father at the time.
Cal, you mustn't neglect the mines. This is your home. You owe it to our clan to work the mines. I don't want to hear the nonsense on the fact that the mines are silent. What does that even mean? Clanging and hammering down there at all hours of the day. Most complain that it's too loud, but you complained that it's too quiet. Leave it to me to have the one son that finds the mines too quiet to work in. Let's not talk about the forges, though. I thought that one so drawn to fire, such as yourself, would at least relish the chance to see what our forges could do with fire. And for God's sake, what is your obsession over plants? Nothing grows down here. Everything is imported. You're wasting your time studying plants when you could be using your time and energy forging and crafting goods fit for kings and conquerors. A dwarf in tune with nature and being chastised for it whilst predominantly living underground, that is odd. But his namesake does lend itself to the primordial plains, Firestone. But this should not have been enough to spark the fire within.
95 years prior. A rogue wanderer, disguised as a dwarven elder, talking to Cal.
Kossuth, heed not the words of your dwarven father. Greater destiny awaits you. On the day of your birth, a blue comet flew across the sky, eclipsing even the sun in its luster. Beyond these pits of iron and gold, you will find yourself midst your crater that caused earth and trees to tremor at its wake. The whirling chaos of fire has blessed you. Blessed you with the power to set free those who are bound to lesser fates. Go out into the world and be free yourself, so you can remember how to free others like you.
Oh, what do we have here? An entity that is redacted? Inconceivable. Only a wanderer could have done such a thing. They're obviously scheming to reunite the fire's body with its spirit. But why? They were sealed eons ago. What purpose would it serve to free them now? And what others were they intending to free through this?
Prior. These words echoed through Caldon's mind as he hired a young and up-and-coming Captain Bennett to smuggle him across the sea to a land where he could start fresh and be free without the constraints and pressures of his home. Cal landed on the shores of Vaxington. Unbeknownst to him, war had been set loose here, fueled by the family he had left behind. To avoid being enslaved by the humans, Cal had to disappear. Disappear into the forest and fend for himself. Being away from home and thrust into hostile land, Cal had not a person to lean on, but only the earth around him. Over the many years of isolation, Cal had grown in tune with nature, talking to the plants and to the earth. They said not a word to him for 50 years, but when they did, they told him stories. Stories of the past. They told him of near-extinct creatures known as dinosaurs, and what they lived like and what they looked like. They told him of a blue meteor that crashed into the earth millennia ago, and that it was the cause of a near mass extinction of the dinosaurs, but that a few giants saved some from its clutches, hiding them from its fiery wrath. Eventually, they were able to tether this great annihilator to its crash site so that it would not threaten the status quo of the world. Cal, seeking this crash site, went on an expedition far, far to the west in uncharted lands, only guided there by the oldest trees which knew the way. He came across a crater that stretched for 20 miles around. At the center of this crater, he spotted a faint spark of light that glowed dimly blue. Upon reaching the epicenter, Cal was confronted by a feeble fire elemental. It promised Cal that it would free him from his isolation if Cal agreed to host the elemental within his own body and soul. So even the land was yearning for the return of fire, seeing as they led Caldun, the body, to Kossuth, the spirit. I suppose the rotting of the plains spurred their decision, the Shadowfell corrupting the Feywild. Perhaps they sought to purge the plains of the grime that began to fester within them and began anew. But more importantly, now that he is unshackled, what does he intend to do? The Wanderer moves the scroll back to the present and pops a good berry into his mouth. These are actually pretty good.
You see Cal walk into the white desert. He is blinded by the light shimmering on the hillsides. He sees a tent at the top of the hill, and he walks towards it. You can see that the entrance is flapping in a light breeze, and he walks inside to see Granger sitting at a chair.
Granger?
She wipes tears from her face and says, I knew you would be the rising sun, the burning flame, the phoenix to point the way. But now is your time to rest, child. And she points out the other entrance to a beautiful, lush jungle looking oasis, and you see Cal walk out the other side of the tent as he disappears. I hear you outside, Garg. It is rather bright out there. Why don't you come inside too? I know we only just talked.
What? Miss! Good to see you. I swear, I was swinging around, and it got a little black, and I don't know, my head hurts. I can't think what happened. Do you know what happened? You have the scroll thing, right?
Yes. My child, you have perished from the material plane. I know we just talked, but your journey has come to an end. I know you've spent your whole life searching, your whole life wandering. But what say you stay with me? Walk time and help it along.
I mean, I guess it seems to be enough room in the tent, but why would you want someone like me?
You are a chosen person. You are chosen by me. I meant what I said in the castle. She reaches out to hand you a magical quill tip pen. In the distance, throughout the background, you hear the dancing and singing of your tribe in the distance. Well, what say you?
So Garg is taking all of it in. The sound of euphoria behind him, but also can feel the emanence of power from the scroll before him. And as other stories become louder and louder, you see Garg just look over his shoulder with an uncertain smile on his face.
Hello, listeners. In this business, sometimes there's technical errors, and in the actual recording of this episode, we lost this episode in transit. Cal and Garg both died in an overpowered battle to the death. We will now go around the table to discuss and talk specifically on that episode. When you listen to episode 65, you will hear the emotion of the impact of the loss that this plays from this day on. Well, everyone, how's it going?
Going good?
I'm still alive and kicking, so...
At least one of your characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other one's not.
I know. Like, I think it was funny because I believe previous content had this, but I did find it intriguing how for both Isaiah and me, this was our first player character deaths.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of coincidences with our characters, you know?
So, I'm doing fine. I wasn't doing fine. When Garg met his demise, that was not a fun day. But I don't know. That is at the end of the day, like I've said before, that I need to mute my phone. But yeah, with D&D, the beauty of it is it's a lot like life. You think you have these plans and you don't, you know, like a fire-breathing ice worm can come out of the ground and just kill you at any moment.
Yep.
Fire-breathing ice worm. Yep. Yep.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to kind of paint the scenario, the party comes into this ice lair. You guys have been tracking down Sheriff.
To be fair, we didn't know it was an ice lair.
Until we got there.
Until we,
no. I'm painting the picture.
All right.
I'm painting the picture.
Sometimes you have to start with the depths.
Yeah.
You start with the beautiful sky.
Yep. Okay. You can color in the lines once I put them down.
Little trees.
So you guys come into this snow and ice lair, and you hear Shara talking to an ice giant, or frost giant. And you guys stealth, or Dutch kind of stealths around, and you guys come up and... Johnny is disguised as
Lord Gresk,
yeah. And he presents the captured and returned prisoners.
Being Garg and Cal.
Yes.
And that was a quote-unquote with Ian's fingers.
Yes, and in the midst of that conversation, Johnny, why don't you tell us what happened?
Every detail. We were having a great little talk about how I had done everything I had promised. I had captured the prisoners, and then one of the prisoners started mouthing off, and I figured, hey, this is a great time to make a little commotion. And so I picked Garg up, and I threw him right at the giant, thinking,
No, at her.
At Shara.
Yeah, after I said you were stupid, you got mad and threw me at Shara.
And then decided, huh.
Really quick, just to interject.
We gave him his sword.
Zediak took Garg's sword because I didn't want him to look like he was an armed slave. But Zediak gave him a short sword, a magical short sword that he had. Because there had been a very inkling of a talk of maybe if this goes south, we need to make sure that everyone's armed and ready to go. Cal doesn't need weapons because he's a beast.
But that inkling was last resort.
Last resort. So go ahead, continue.
I, as Johnny, figured, one giant and a doppelganger. We've killed tons of these. We got this. My hit points are full. I've got most of my spells. We're golden. And so I started combat. Unbeknownst to me, not everybody's hit points and spells were full. Some of our hit points were at 12.
Like the person you threw at the enemies.
In all fairness, though, Garg was all for it in going in the air trying to slice and dice. He was trying to go out with style.
We almost took the giant down in one round, so I feel confident in my choice.
Now, the combat actually went quite well.
Until
Cal decided to...
Fireball.
What was it, a fifth level fireball you chucked?
I'm
pretty sure it was a fifth level fireball.
A giant fireworks explosion.
Cal never saw anything else besides the giant.
Again, I believe it was Zediak and Dutch that saw something underneath the ice.
We noticed it was ice and then saw a figure, but we didn't exactly get...
We didn't really get a whole lot of info other than we saw something underneath the ice. And we're like, huh. And then Cal threw a fireball, and then all the stuff underneath the ice started moving. And at that point, it was...
I don't believe that you guys are like, hey, there's a...
No,
we didn't, because we didn't really have any...
Cal didn't know that he was going to wake up a bunch of stuff underneath. He was just like, hey, Frost Giant doesn't resist fire, and even if it did, it doesn't matter, because I ignore resistance.
So by this point, most of the party is like... all huddled up on the platform where Shara and the ice troll giant were. Mm-hmm. And Dutch was all the way on the opposite side of the room.
Yeah, taking shots.
And what about the part where the other tank runs down the hallway and leaves?
No,
we haven't got there yet.
After the fireball, they both, I think, failed their saves. And it was... like, we were actually looking pretty good.
I did a lot of damage.
We were looking pretty good.
If I remember, the Frost Giant had 5 hit points.
Yeah, yeah, it was...
like, it was almost first round kill.
Yeah, and...
impressive.
Zediak had Misty Stepped to cover the distance and then did a bunch of attacks on the Frost Giant. And we were... basically had him almost cornered and surrounded because the Fire Giant couldn't leave my range without taking an attack opportunity, which I could stop it from running.
And Shara also was pretty beat up too.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was going well, but the fireball woke up the Remoraz underneath the ice.
Yes.
Remorazes,
two of them.
Which came out to razz us.
Honestly would have been a pretty...
razzmatazzles?
Yeah, two Remoraz would have been a good fight, but we could have beat two Remoraz at full capacity.
Yeah. Also.
Which I was.
At full capacity, if we had, have the mindset of, let's fight this out.
Yeah.
But by the time those two Remorai erupted from the icy chambers below, Johnny decided to turn into a T-Rex.
And because the Frost Giant took off.
He died, but Shara left.
Shara took off. Yeah. That's right.
She took off. And Johnny, being the tank, kind of, turned into a giant T-Rex.
When he's a T-Rex, he's a tank.
Yeah, he turned into a T-Rex to chase her.
And then decided...
Dino Man Dan.
To leave
after the Remoraz had popped up. Like, he knew they were there, but decided to chase her because... and credit to Johnny, like, our original goal was to go kill her. And he did attempt that, but he then left Garg and Cal with Remoraz standing in front of them. Mm-hmm.
I believe he left while...
Garg, Cal, and Zediak with Remoraz standing in front of them.
And then you, I think you misty stepped again to get into like the doorway.
So what basically what happened after that, if I remember correctly, was Garg and Cal had both been, because I was relatively last in the initiative order. I was relatively last. Dutch had taken a shot at Shara, and I'm pretty sure you like crit her, walloped her pretty good. Yeah,
basically when she was running down the hall, I got her pretty good.
Pretty heavy shot, and then the Remoraz had a hold of Cal and Garg. I think Garg went individually. Garg went unconscious immediately. And Cal had been swallowed.
No, I was just grappled.
You were swallowed.
And then, got swallowed.
Yeah, I was grappled, and then the next turn.
You got swallowed.
Because I couldn't break free.
Yeah.
So I didn't have enough strength check.
My character, and I remember having, I think I took probably, which I try not to make long turns, but I had a very hard time making the decision to look at everything I had as far as options for my character, realizing that there was literally nothing Zediac could do to change the outcome of Garg or Cal's situation without basically going in and dying with solidarity. So Zediac had to make the very, very difficult choice, which will probably come up later. He had to make the choice to leave them, knowing that there's nothing that he could do to help them, but he could still try and catch Shara.
And that's another thing is rough. Like trying to make a real decision as your character and not as a player.
And that was hard because like Justin was like, man, I don't want to like say peace, but you know, there was nothing that I could do, metagame or not, that I could help them for more than a round max.
Yeah.
And then I'd have no tools left to get myself out.
Yeah.
And Cal for a round did manage to escape from inside
Cal
the Remoraz.
Cal pulled a great maneuver, yeah.
What he did was he had his wildfire spirit come right up against the belly of a Remoraz, and they use its fiery teleportation to take Cal out of the belly and 30 feet away.
And then he did
mass healing. I'm not sure if it's mass healing or mass healing word. Anyways, he did a giant AoE healing spell, and got Garg back up, got himself back up a few extra hit points, gave some health to Zediac as well. Zediac.
That reminds me, earlier in the fight, Cal had killed the Frost Giant. And what's that ability called?
So, Cal killed, I'm not sure if he killed it or if someone else killed the Frost Giant.
Yeah, finishing blow.
And so he used his Flames of Life reaction to make a little well of light appear where the Frost Giant died, so that either there could be some healing going on or if there could be some damage if an enemy went into it.
Zediac, having made the choice that he could not help them, picked up that mote of healing or whatever and left. I decided that I would take it and leave. And that might have helped. We don't know because it wasn't really a ton of health, but
I think I got you max health.
No, definitely not.
From the healing.
Yeah. It was max healing,
but
not
you at max.
It didn't put my
character. I didn't put my character back at max health.
One way or the other, Garg and Kree couldn't break free of the Remorazes. Johnny having
Garg and Cal.
Garg and Cal.
Those guys, yeah.
Yeah. Kree couldn't break free of
Kree anything. Can't break free of
anything.
Kree can't get away from Destiny, apparently.
The dungeon where he's being tortured. Maybe it's German. Who knows?
Anyways.
I had the tough choice of I had turned into a T-Rex because I saw Shara getting away. I needed something fast. I needed something deadly. And as a function of polymorph, you take the intelligence scores of what you turn into. So I turned into a T-Rex with my last thought being, I'm going to get Shara. And so as a player, I was left with the, man, like, I'm kind of bound by what I've chosen. I want to help, but I set forth an action, and I got to stick to it. I've put myself into, I can either, you know, be dishonest about what I've done or play it out.
Yeah.
Which then you have... Johnny having to run down, and then that's where Zediak Missy stepped to the...
basically the entrance, right?
Yeah, where Shara and Johnny were running down.
Shara snuck into a side passage that Johnny didn't notice at first.
Mm-hmm. And then Dutch started following the giant T-Rex and Zediak, seeing both Garg. I'm not sure if Dutch actually saw from the viewpoint of Garg being dying, like being like just humbled and burning to death, just because I think the monster in the map area was blocking and on a higher level. Definitely saw Cal though, and went to the entrance, then turning back, seeing both of his comrades falling, and had to make the decision of, I could try to help, I'm gonna die if I help. These two giant things are distracted. If they come crawling towards us, they probably are faster underground, which apparently they're not. Derek thought they were. And so, because I don't know what these creatures are. And so I just played it as he hates to, but he, like Justin said earlier, there was nothing that him alone could have done if it, with him still alive. Especially with the other two magic people leaving. And one being dead and one's inside of a belly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of my biggest things, is I was trying to think, like, well... could Dutch and I take these things? And I was looking at it going, I don't have any of my utility.
We could have maybe done so if we got really lucky rolls.
But I feel like we could have.
That's the problem.
I feel like we could have ran away but not defeated them.
Yeah, the risk of trying to get Garg and Cal out alive and not have anybody else die in the rescue was super slim, and the risk of Johnny being up there by himself and not having, you know, having all four of us die, because my guy's, you know, Zediak's pretty good at doing damage, but he doesn't have a ton of health and he doesn't have very high AC. And
I thought you were gonna say he's really good at taking damage.
Well, that's part of my class feature, is taking damage from my stuff. Yeah. So, but no,
really good at hurting himself,
which was always funny because technically Garg was the tank.
Yeah,
at 92 health.
Yeah, Garg was the tank, and we started the fight with our tank being damaged
at third of his health.
In all fairness, Dutch I think had full health, but
Johnny had full health
by himself.
Cal had like half.
You're not super good.
I'm
having a bunch of stuff on top of you, though.
Yeah, by two of those things by myself. Definitely probably wouldn't have... maybe I might have made my
so from saves. Metagaming, we've learned we need to do long rests.
Oh, well, that was the plan, though.
The plan was to long rest.
Long rest.
We were just looking around for a safe place to rest, and we wandered into an ice cave and found Shara. No, hey, let's just deal with it.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. I still think, though, as much as it sucked, and it's... and you'll get into, Ian, more of, like, why that even existed. I think, as usual, we did a really good job of sticking to the actual role-playing of this game and not treating it like a board game and something that we had to, like a puzzle we had to solve, but rather it was a dilemma we had to face, even if at the cost of our own dignity in losing our first characters.
Yep.
Sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
does. I don't know if I've ever told the story of my first player death, but... it's way worse. Don't worry.
Player death?
Character death.
He's like, I'm mad. So I shot my DM. Yeah.
But in the next episode that you'll hear, you'll definitely hear the repercussions of what happened.
No, and that's the thing, is there you, and this is something that D&D is what I think is really powerful about this mode of game and this exercise of, you know, storytelling, is the heroes don't have a straight line journey to success. And there is a lot of education and there's a lot of growth that happens when you fail at something, even if it's a partial failure. You know, like, Zediak didn't die, but he had to make the choice to leave two people. And with his history, like, that's really tough. You know, you're having to weigh, can I help? Is my life worth trying to save these people? And having to live with the decision you make, you know, that's the growth of a hero story. You know, I'm probably not going to have, hopefully, never have to deal with that. You know, Justin doesn't have to deal with that in real life. You know, giant frost centipedes shooting out of the ground. But
I don't know the way 2020 is working. We still got a month left.
We still got some time.
We got 1 month.
Zediak doesn't have access to machine guns.
No, yeah, no, but it's this.
Magic machine guns. I think I would take magic.
Yeah, no, well, you know,
that's a point to be made.
There's this great thing about this game is that we can explore things with relatively, you know, low consequences. But, and I say that because none of us actually died, but the emotion of that loss is real. And Cal had a moment that, I mean, it will change how I view a spell for the rest of my D&D playing. You know, whenever I think about the spell, you should tell the story, Isaiah.
So after Cal used his wildfire spirit to teleport out of the Remoraz and did the healing and everyone, the Remoraz just used his 30 feet of movement, caught right back up, and re-swallowed Cal, and Cal was like running out of options. It's dealing fire damage from being inside of it. All of his spells are fire-based.
He's the worst thing that you could find.
He's melting inside of the Remoraz. He used all of his big spells, healing, doing the mass healing and the fireballs at the beginning of combat. So he didn't really have anything to break his way out. Isaiah and Cal didn't know if he did enough damage inside of the belly that you might be able to be vomited up. But I think with what he had, he wouldn't be able to reach whatever that threshold was. Realizing the situation that he was in, he just called his wildfire spirit to him inside of the Remoraz's stomach and cast Goodberry. Handed a couple good berries to his wildfire spirit, ate some himself, just made peace with his death. And he said thank you.
Garber's knocked unconscious and then was spat into fire.
Like a cigarette ashtray.
I'm sorry. A cigarette butt smushed in the ground.
It's funny because, like, the impact that, like, someone like Cal or Garg, or even, like, Dutch, who are, like, I would say the B team of the quote-unquote faithful neighbors, who, like, they're not the original people, but at least to us, they all, at least Cal and Garg dying, like, made an impression on everyone. Like, that moment, I wish we were able to have cameras so everyone could see, like, the Justin just like quickly trying to make a decision, but also Justin, not Zedia, but Justin like panicking. Yeah, me like running hands through my hair and like, oh, I really want to help out, but I also don't want to have a TPK on this. Like, yeah. And then just afterwards, like picking on Thomas for like, why'd you do that? But obviously he's playing to his character. And then everyone just hated Ian because he allowed us.
Let's say Ian just sitting there with his cob pipe, just going.
But like,
hey, if you're gonna pour in and do 110% and put emotion into playing your character true, then you're gonna feel it 110% when they die.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but like these two characters that we don't, at least both us players and characters don't know that much about. It's ironic how much of an impact they made.
Yeah.
Just because they were there for, like, I want to say at least 25-plus episodes now.
Good amount of time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good testament to Chris and Isaiah's ability to play their characters.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, with that... Well, and I was going to say, Ian, as far as how did you feel...
Whoa! This isn't about me.
This is what you know, because I run a campaign for the podcast as well. As a DM, I'm curious what your thought process went through that whole thing of like, okay, this is where they're doing. Oh no, they decided to go the fighting route when. You know about all this stuff, and it's like, oh, these guys, they don't know what they're getting into. Uh-oh, this isn't going. And you know, what's that struggle?
I think I already summed up. Have you seen that shocked Pikachu face meme?
So yeah. There's a couple of things that were running through my mind. One, Thomas, you're an asshole.
No. Thomas pretending to be a dragon.
Number one, Thomas. Playing chaotic characters. I was like, of course it would be Thomas to trigger these lines of effects. I still love you. But that was the first thought. Second thought was the Remoraz den was going to be flavor text to be an eerie room that you guys spotted these things slurping basically and slithering under the ice. The problem was when you guys shot like 70 damage of fire magic at the ice, I'm like, there's no way they wouldn't notice that. Also, the reason why, if you know any lore about them, is that they hunt frost giants for food. So the frost giant in there, they were they're basically pre-cooked. Smelling that. And yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it sucks. But the other thing is that I, in my earlier DMing days, I wanted to be the pleaser DM, whereas sometimes you can't please everyone. And, you know, if you try to play as true as possible to the stat blocks of the monsters you're running, that's up to you guys on how you get out of that. If I'm pummeling you guys, I'm not going to just pretend like they just decided to not kill you, you know. So it is tough, like, because I was fully expecting in the final episodes for Kalangar to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's one thing playing a you know, like a big evil bad guy who beat, you know, you see that in a lot of stories, that, you know, the heroes, they go and fight the bad guy when they're not quite ready, they get their butt kicked. And he just is like, he makes an example out of one of them, or he, you know, enslaves them, or they decide that, you know, yeah, go and tell everybody how terrifying I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll pull some, you know, you can narratively pull that. But when you've got two beasts that are just there to eat something, it's like, all right, you got two predators that have chunks of meat in their mouth, and they're just going to decide that, yeah, I'm not really that hungry right now.
Yeah.
That's really tough to... Everyone's going to kind of look at that and go, ah.
Yeah. So. But with that being said, please tune into episode 65 next week. Happy gaming.